Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, the last episode of Season 2, Dave, number 128. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd. Dave, we're wrapping up Season 2 because it's T-minus 1.
Absolutely. I guess it's Latrobe Eve. Anybody got any unique ideas of what to call it? All I know is my Pirates viewing will be going down quite a bit now, and all eyes, myself will be on the Steelers and Latrobe through hopefully the seventh Lombardi trophy.
Yeah, and Dave, you know, some of the locals up there, they call it Latrobe. So, you know, we'll use both, but I might have to give you the local Latrobe pronunciation here as we go forward. And as I've told you, and I'll tell our listeners, I will be working on Steeler Nation Radio live every day, basically starting on Thursday. Obviously, the players have to report by 4 tomorrow, but there'll be no activity, and practice Thursday is not open to the public. But I'll be up there. 2 to 4 on Steelers Nation Radio, and then almost every night, either 6 to 8 or 7 to 9 on 970 ESPN or on 104.7 or on DVE. And I don't have that scheduled yet, but we'll keep you posted, and I'll have Dave posted on SteelersDepot.com. But we'll have a lot of info for you from there. Hopefully, some good interviews and other stuff that we'll be having on the Terrible Podcast.
And also, for those that have the iHeartRadio app, they should be able to get the Steelers Nation Radio on that. I've listened to that before. There's also, and I'll track down the link, you can listen to it online as well, too. So definitely a big deal for David, and hope everybody will support him through this. And, you know, it's good to hear and good to have another set of eyes. I'm going to try to have David on a few of the nights there in some of these, you know, during training camp. I like to do these little 15-minute audio sort of mini podcast throughout the training camp as well.
All right, fantastic stuff. And to get to maybe more important news, that stuff that's actually concerning the team, is this afternoon, I guess Ed Bouchette is the guy who broke the news. Dave, no surprise, but, like to get deals done before camp, and we talk about the players all the time, but coaches got to get paid too. And Mike Tomlin gets extended through 2016. Under contract this year, an option for next year was his current deal. Now he's in the nest for a few more years.
Yeah, much anticipated. They like to, you know, they probably have had this in done for a while now. I think Mark Cabali pointed on Twitter, you know, just to ramp up the excitement and all everything that surrounds training camp and all like that. They announced, as you said, an extension through the 2016 season. No word on the money yet. We're not likely to find that out for a long time. I think Forbes magazine earlier this offseason listed Tomlin as making something like $5.75 million a year, easily in the top 10 coaches as far as earnings. I would think now he's probably in that top five pretty easily.
Yeah, and, you know, that stuff will fluctuate as he gets toward the end of his deal. He'll slide back, but, yep, got to think he's making, $6 or $7 million a year. He's done a good job. I think as Steeler fans, expectations are very high. Mike Tomlin was a surprise hire when it happened. Some speculation that he doesn't even get the interview without the Rooney Rule, which aptly named after the Rooneys. And in he comes, he wows the Steelers. And the two leading candidates, Ken Whisenhunt and Russ Grimm, are off to Arizona before you know it. And great success for Tomlin. There's the Jacksonville playoff loss was disappointing. The season they didn't make the playoffs at 8-8, disappointing. But it has been a very good run for a very young coach. And it's good to see him back in, good to see him extended to stay in the fold.
Absolutely. 55-25 regular season record through his first five seasons. That includes three AFC North titles, two AFC championships, and the Super Bowl championship in the 2008 season. So I'm excited to have him.
That's a pretty good resume.
That's an excellent resume. I couldn't agree more. 5-3 playoff record. But you're going to lose some around there, and hopefully back on top again this year.
Dave, the other news, good news, also not unexpected, but the dominoes had to fall a little bit, and the David DeCastro deal finally got done. A little bit of a tweak in the fourth year and an option in the fifth year. Maybe you can give us the details.
Yeah, just under $8 million as expected in the slotting system. The fourth year is not guaranteed, although it does include a $300,000 roster bonus and a $100,000 workout bonus. So both those, I know the roster bonus is due, I believe, in March. I mean, although it's not guaranteed, it's as close to a guarantee as probably as you're going to come because, it forces the Steelers' hand to make the decision on him quickly in that fourth year. Of course, it comes with a fifth-year option as well. As far as breakdown goes, I don't have the complete breakdown. Possibly by the end of the day, I believe his base salary this year is going to be $390,000. I believe, don't quote me on this, but it's hard not to when you're on a podcast. I believe the signing bonus right around $4 million, which should make his 2012 cap hit right around, I believe, $1.3 or so. Million, but once again, I'll have the complete breakdown of that over the next day or two. But that now puts the Steelers out. They also had signed yesterday a tackle out of Eastern Michigan, great offensive lineman named Bridger Booch or Boucher. Not 100%.
Bobby Boucher.
Yeah, what a great football name. This guy at Eastern Michigan played both right and left tackle. A little undersized at 6'3". Probably would have projected mostly as a guard at the next level. Kind of a lumbering type dude. I don't expect him this late of signing to get work at the guard position, so I suspect you'll see him what limited reps he'll get at possibly a right tackle position. So now that those are out of the way, the roster preseason or training camp roster stands at the 90 now. Of course, Mike Wallace remains unsigned currently, and that's where we stand as far as kind of the wrapping up the loose ends as far as the roster goes, and all the draft picks are now under contract.
Now, Dave, does Mike Wallace count in that number of 90?
Yes, technically I think he does because the tender has been placed on him.
Right, so he has to be able to sign it and come in, and that they have a vacant roster spot essentially for him.
Yeah, I think basically he might be put on the, I don't know how they work that, did not report list.
Did not report, right. DNR.
Something like that. But he does technically, I think, hold a roster spot being as he is tendered.
Okay. And then that takes us into camp, and we pretty much know where we are. We've gone through virtually everything leading up to this. So we will be very, Dave and I are going to be kids in a candy store here when they put the pads on and get going. And Dave, I think you did a great job. I got one little bone to pick with you, and you'll know what it is when we get there. But you did a great job here on the nine training camp battles. And let's go through these. Now, we've touched on all these, but I know in the summer, people got a lot of things going on. They're paying less attention. And now that we're gearing up for camp and it's the real deal, I don't think it hurts to review a lot of these that we've talked about and a few we haven't talked about. So let's get right in it. The first one, and let's give our thoughts on this, on where we think things are going to end up. And the first one is one that has been the focus, and I give you great credit. Your foresight and intuition on this was dead on. Max Starts got clearance from the doctors with his knee, and he's going to be in camp on day one. I certainly didn't think he'd be there this early, but it looks like he'll be PUP, and so he'll be a coach on the sidelines helping Mike Adams. And the Steelers' number two pick, Mike Adams, is there for that roster battle at left tackle.
Yeah, and the big thing is Max Starts, and will he be healthy, say, by the third preseason game or so? I think they're going to give Mike Adams every opportunity to win this left tackle spot, at least in the early portions of training camp. He's not going to have, it's not going to be a pressing concern having Max Starts taking all the first team reps and all like that. So I kind of like what they've done here. The biggest question mark is how Mike Adams does in, say, these beginning portions of training camp, how he does in the first few preseason games, and will Max Starks be ready by week one? I hate to use the term gun after the things that happened in Colorado this past week. Let's just say if pressed for a prediction right now, I would predict that Max Starks will be your week one starter in Denver at left tackle.
Yeah, Dave, I got to think, you know, I guess I think we all hope that that Max is healthy and Mike Adams wins the job. That will speak highly of Mike Adams and what everybody thinks. I'm going to go with you on that, but I'm going to go kind of 55-45, 60-40. I think there's a real chance Adams wins the job. We'll see how look, the Steelers doctors give Max Starks a clean bill of health, and I'm going to assume he's going to be, you know, shortly be 100% and able to do this job. So I'll go with you. I think I'll check the same box, but I'll be leaning heavily, rooting that Mike Adams is able to get this done. The second one, and this is where I just have the small bone to pick, is you've got Keenan Lois against Cortez Allen for the cornerback spot opposite Ike Taylor. And as everybody knows, the reason we say opposite Ike Taylor is Ike is generally given the assignment of covering the other team's number one receiver, so it's not really left corner or right corner. And so in this situation, you know, I think it is a three-man race, and I think you probably think it's a three-man race as well, but the two guys probably, I think you've got them listed properly as Keenan Lewis coming in as the three-year man, or fourth year this year. Is this his fourth year?
Yes, because he was, tendered as a restricted free agent.
And second-year man Cortez Allen, and then second-year man Curtis Brown. And it's been a fun offseason with these guys because they've gotten a lot of positive talk that young guys have. And Keenan Lewis has said he's going to be going to Hawaii in the fall, in the winter. And hopefully he's not going because he's got to play in the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. And let me tell you, David, my reasoning all along with leaving Curtis Brown out of this, A, he has not seen the field on the defensive side of the ball last season as a rookie. I think Cortez Allen, in my opinion, I feel that the coaching staff, feel that much more highly of Cortez Allen. Curtis Brown also missed a little bit of time. How much he did miss during the offseason program, we don't know for sure. But, any missed time during these sessions is not good. And I don't think Curtis Brown is a legitimate guy to battle for an outside spot here. I think at best he could hope to battle for some snaps in a dime or big nickel situation this year. To me it would be a shocker if when they lined up in Denver that Curtis Brown is anything more than the fourth cornerback on the depth chart and continuing to be a special teams contributor. That's why I did not list him specifically by name in that roster battle.
Yeah, and this will be a fun one to watch. This, to me, will be, I think, the most competitive, having, two and a half names or three names if I was writing it up. But all these are going to be interesting stuff, and you've got – but this one, you've got three young guys trying to make a name for themselves. Keenan Lewis did take a nice step forward last year, and it's a good thing because we wouldn't be having this conversation if he didn't. He would have been sayonara, get on with your life's work. And the other two guys, as I've said, the coaches have loved these guys. Toward the second half of last year, we really started to hear that the coaches were enthusiastic about these young guys. So I think that, the two we've talked about here, I think you got them in just the right order. They're the two most interesting. The next one, we go into the offensive backfield, and this is some fun stuff because you've got two guys here, Jonathan Dwyer versus John Clay, as really the backup running back. And the issue here, Dave, as you've written and we've talked about, is if you don't win this job, you might not be on the 53-man. And that will give a small advantage, all things being equal, to Jonathan Dwyer since he's no longer eligible, I don't think, for the practice squad, I meant to say.
You hit it on the head here. Dwyer, the big thing that we talked about last year, David, about this time was can Jonathan Dwyer do the things not related to actually carrying the football? And even though he saw limited time last year, we did see some good recognition and blitz pickup and all like that. John Clay only saw just a handful of snaps in the final few games there. Although he did look good, he's just, in my opinion, not polished enough. Coming out of Wisconsin, being a complete power back, that's to be expected. When you look at this, people will say, well, how come you don't have Baron Batch in here And how come you don't have Rainey in here? Listen, Rainey is a lock to make this roster. I don't see no two ways around it. He is going to be a lock to make the 53-man roster. Baron Batch, I feel the same way. As long as he can overcome, which we'll get this in the next battle we'll cover, as long as he's able to conquer this knee injury, I see no reason why he would not be on the roster. When you add Isaac Redman in there as your starter, I really think Dwyer versus Clay is a battle that if John Clay loses, he goes back to the practice squad, in my opinion. If Jonathan Dwyer loses, he's going to probably be out on the street.
Yeah, and this is going to be a fun one because I like both these guys as runners. I think you've got slightly different styles, and I think Dwyer's probably the more dynamic runner. But both of these guys, and Dave and I talk about this a lot, you want to watch tape, and at the end of the day, both of these guys were tremendously productive in college as runners. Dwyer's issue was failing a drug test, which probably was for Adderall, I think an ADD medicine, and maybe some attitude issues in college that I don't want to talk too much about that because I'm speaking out of school. I don't know all the details, but he fell off boards. He was a guy who was on Mel Kiper's top 25 draft-eligible players at the start of his senior year, and so you can see what Kiper thought of him, and he dropped all the way to the sixth round. So he was – many people thought he's second- or third-round talent, and the limited playing time he's had has been very productive running the football. But Davis pointed out the issues with all young backs, particularly in a one-back set. You need to have a guy who knows exactly where to go quickly to pick up the blitz to keep your quarterback clean. And Clay, you know, touches the ball for the first time last year, busts in for 11 yards. I think that was against the Rams in that game. Also limited time, but a guy who was tremendously productive at Wisconsin, but was in an offensive system that really didn't require him to do much else than run the football. So we'll see the development of these guys. Having OTAs for all these young guys, they're going to take – you know, hopefully take that big step forward, and, you know, we'll see a productive battle there. I think we both think advantage John Dwyer.
Yeah, the only thing is that how is his conditioning? You know, Kevin Colbert called him out by name this offseason, you know, about his weight and all like that and where they would like him to be. Judging by some of the photos or something that you might have seen from this past offseason, Dwyer appeared maybe to have a little bit of a fanny pack hanging around the midsection there. He even told us on the Terrible Podcast that he was going down to South Florida. At first he said Tom Shaw, but it ended up being the other place he changed his mind to go down and work with Antonio Brown and Lawrence Timmons, I believe, this past month. So we'll see. Is this a guy that's going to pass the conditioning test day one and be in the good graces with Mike Tomlin, or is he going to already be in the doghouse and automatically give John Clay another rung up that ladder?
My God, I hope for his sake he comes in shape because, you know, look, this is your chosen profession. You're 24 years old or whatever you are. There's no excuse. So it would be a red flag of all red flags. But, yes, you're right to point it out. You touched on Batch. Mawelde Moore, he's gone. He's in Indianapolis. Thank you, Mawelde. Job well done. He really was a guy who did he contributed to the Steelers in his time here, and I think he made it a year longer than I thought he would. So kudos to him, and I hope he gets another couple good years out of it in Indianapolis. Yeah, I think Dave, we're on the same spot here. I'm less inclined to think that Batch is a given to make this roster at running back. Baron Batch, we're talking about. I do think Rainey's a given. I think they saw the explosiveness in OTAs and minicamp. The in-space stuff is what really excites people. Now, Baron Batch looked great in the backers on backs drills last summer before he got hurt, and he was they were pleased with him. Of course, they didn't have the OTAs and other things, so they've actually probably seen more of Chris Rainey now, even though he's drafted a year later, than Baron Batch because he got hurt so early in camp, just, I think, a week in. It's just, to me, it's just not a given for Batch. I think it is a given for Rainey.
I think Batch is a given if he can, and I put him versus just his knee in this battle here because that's the biggest test, you know, not even a year out, a year removed from his injury, although he was able to ditch the blue non-contact jersey in mini camp there. you know, I think this is a guy that's you know, showed in college his ability to pick up the blitz, to recognize the blitz. Extremely smart. I mean, extremely smart guy. Probably having no problems whatsoever picking up this new offense. In my opinion, he is your change of pace back, your third down back. He can do it all. He can run between the tackles. Something that Chris Rainey, I'm worried about. Now, I am excited about Rainey. From you know, being in sort of a rocket type backfield, a two back set, being able to be stretched out, put out wide in some four or five receiver sets that the Steelers will have this year. So I don't envision those two being in a battle against each other. Of course, anything can happen, you know, along the lines here, and my thinking might not be right up the alley as the coaches, but I think that they're going to keep you know, four backs here. And I think, assuming Batch can beat this knee injury, I think him and Rainey are two of those four, with Redmond and, of course, the winner of Dwyer versus Clay.
Right. That'll be interesting stuff to see. And you're right to say we just don't know enough about Todd Haley and how he's going to look at these things and, you know, what his thinking is about constructing the offense. But, you know, we'll learn as we go, and we'll share with you what we learn. Dave, the next one is a guy I know. There's Corbin Bryant is a guy you're high on out of Northwestern last year. Al Woods is a guy who has maybe a little better pedigree out of LSU, if I remember correctly. He was not an original Steeler draftee. I'm trying to remember if it was Tampa Bay or
Saints drafted him originally.
Saints drafted him. We had him. We cut him. Tampa Bay picked him up, and we picked him up again. Something like that, I think, is how the transactions went. But both these guys are battling for possibly the 53rd or the last spot on the defensive line.
Yeah, Woods, after being drafted by New Orleans, evidently just did not fit, got cut, signed on with Tampa Bay for a little bit, then ended up with the Seahawks, and the Seahawks waived him, middle or so last year. The Steelers claimed him off waivers. Now, of course, this was after Aaron Smith and Chris Hoke and all the injuries that had happened to the defensive line. The interesting thing, even though he did not play defensive snaps last year, is the Steelers chose to hang on to him for the remainder of the season, which lets me kind of think that John Mitchell definitely saw something in him. He, of course, is back at camp. He is no lock to make the 53-man roster whatsoever. And, you know, with Casey Hampton, if Casey Hampton starts the 2012 season on the PUP list, then I theorize there could be as many as two defensive end, spots open on this roster. If Casey Hampton is indeed ready or close to being ready and not put on PUP to start the season, I theorize that there's only one spot open. Now, we've talked about Corbin Bryant quite a bit during this offseason, a kid that a few in the media probably thought, should have made the 53-man roster out of camp last year. Of course, he didn't. He bounced on and off the practice squad, spent the one game up against the Arizona Cardinals in limited snaps. Really, David, we're dealing here with this battle is an unknown quantity on both sides of it. I wish I could say Al Woods has the head, has the advantage here. Corbin Bryant has the advantage here. Really, in my opinion, this is a coin flip, and thus why it's going to be such a good battle to watch during training camp.
Yeah, and, you know, there's also the off chance that somebody comes in and outplays both of them and somebody else makes it. We just, as you said, we haven't seen these guys enough. We don't have enough tape. We don't have enough feedback. And so, you know, always in as we move down this list, the chances that a dark horse comes in and is involved are get higher. They're guys that Dave and I haven't had any experience with, undrafted free agents. We haven't obviously seen some of the draft picks and don't know much about them. In terms of a lot of tape and a lot of game stuff. So we'll be learning like the rest of you, but we'll see on these things. And then, Dave, the next one, the linebacker thing, this is interesting because there are a lot of guys in the mix. But, I mean, we know who the starting four is, presumably if everybody's healthy. But, obviously, they've had issues on the outside with Harrison and Woodley being injured last year. And then inside, you have Larry Foote displacing or replacing James Ferrier. You hope Lawrence Timmons is the guy who really takes that step forward this year and becomes the all-pro that people have called for him to be the past few years. He's been healthier than the other guys, but he has had a history of ankle injuries. So there's a lot of issues there. The Steeler defense, as everybody knows, is primarily built to have the linebackers be the playmakers and be the guys who get things done. And you've pointed out here a guy who the Steelers signed, who I don't know a lot about, Brandon Johnson, and then Chris Carter and Stevenson Sylvester, fifth-round picks two and three years ago. Carter out of Fresno State last year. He was on the sidelines a fair bit. And Sylvester, we haven't seen a lot of either, just couldn't get on the field. So you got three guys there. Tell me how you're thinking about these guys in terms of positional experience.
Well, Brandon Johnson is another wild card in here, being he was such a late addition. First, you have to ask yourself, was his signing because maybe Jason Worlds is behind in his rehab from off-season wrist surgery, and perhaps, you know, possibly to start camp off on the PUP list? Or is he a signing to help push both Chris Carter and Stevenson Sylvester? Sylvester, of course, plays inside. Carter, of course, plays outside. Neither of those two draft picks have, as you said, pointed out, have seen the field very much, you know, in their time on the Steelers roster. Carter, of course, suffering from a hamstring injury last year. Sylvester just lack of playing time, although Kevin Colbert pointed out he did have a little bit of a knee problem last year. Johnson is a guy that comes out of the Bengals system, an extremely good special teams player, can play both inside and outside. The thing that I worry most about him, David, is he really has never been asked to rush the passer in sort of a 3-4 outside linebacker look. According to reports, he's been asked to bulk up even more. He's a pretty big dude and moves pretty good. So that would lead me to believe that he'll start off camp on the outside, but he does have the ability to shift inside, which makes him a multi-purpose add when you add in his experience on special teams as well, too. A lot of people are going to say, why aren't you throwing Robinson, the kid out of the undrafted
free agent? Adrian Robinson out of Temple, right?
Right, out of Temple. Why aren't you throwing
him? You mentioned him as a sleeper on one of your articles earlier.
Absolutely. I see him as a perfect fit for the practice squad. I'm not saying that he cannot make the 53-man roster, but just judging by the way they want to look at experience and not possibly wanting to give up on Carter and Sylvester too early, the odds weigh, you know, heavily into two of these three guys making the 53-man roster. Now, there is a possibility Brandon Johnson, Chris Carter, and Stevenson Sylvester, all three make the 53-man roster if the Steelers decide to carry nine linebackers instead of what I projected as being eight out of training camp. I think a lot of that...
Dave, let's go right into your last one there. We'll skip over the one and we'll come back to it. But because Brandon Johnson might well be going against Will Allen for the 53rd spot on the roster. He's a guy who's been on the club, defensive back, but really a special teams guy solely. And so at the end of the day, it could be those two guys, right?
You could see something like that if DeMond Cromartie-Smith steps up and they get maybe some production out of like Myron Rowe or Robert Golden, two of the guys, young guys signed this offseason. A lot of people are willing to throw Will Allen right off the roster right now because of his over $1.6 million.
And I have to say, Dave, I am one of those guys.
I'm not one of those guys because the sheer fact of he's a Mike Tomlin guy, sure he hasn't seen any time in his first two seasons with the Steelers, but he hasn't had to, right? Ryan Mundy's the next guy off the bench after Ryan Clark and Troy Polamalu. Clark, of course, is going to miss the first game against Denver, which could make the Steelers think about carrying five safeties out of training camp instead of the normal four that they like to. Will Allen is a great locker room guy, a big value on special teams. And so we're going to be on opposite sides of the fence here. I like the odds of Will Allen staying unless, you know, Myron Rowe or Robert Golden or unless the Steelers decide to only keep four and throw Will Allen out. But theoretically, the way you're saying Brandon Johnson, Will Allen for a 53rd roster spot, yeah, I agree. It could definitely come down to that.
Yeah, and one of the things, I mean, I guess my feeling on Will Allen is not only the $1.6 million, but the issue is the guy's 30. Ohio State, he's had a productive NFL career. Now, 30 is advantageous in terms of the experience if you need him on the field. In special teams, you know, maybe he starts to lose a little bit of a little speed, a little skill. So that maybe hurts him a little bit. 30's old for an NFL player, no doubts about that. So the question is, if all things are being equal, you'd like to keep the younger guy because you'd like to think there's upside in the younger guy and he's going to be cheaper. But we'll see. You know, of course, we're having fun here. We'll see how it plays out. And I think it is important to point out, as Dave did, that Ryan Clark, we know he's going to miss game one. So the Steelers might be inclined to carry an extra defensive back that first week. and make a roster move after week one when Ryan Clark comes back, because they're not going to get any roster exemption for Ryan Clark. They're going to go in there. It's going to be, you know, you're still obviously going to dress 45. You got 53, but essentially you're picking 45 out of 52. And the unfortunate thing is one of your 52 is also one of your 22. The guy who's out is one of your 22. So the Steelers will have some things to think about. And I'm sure in the week preceding, somebody is going to get a lot more run than they would normally get because Ryan Clark's going to be out in week one.
And the thing to think about Will Allen, he is such a Mike Tomlin guy. I think if he did not have a legitimate good shot at making this roster, I think the Steelers would have cut him loose before the start of training camp.
So I think that's a fair point. Absolutely a fair point. I mean, look, Jonathan Scott's gone. There are other guys who are gone. If they didn't think he was a competitive for a spot, he wouldn't be here.
Yeah, and you know, and we just don't know what we have. And Myron Rowe, great backstory. I just don't see him latching on to the 53-man roster. I really have my doubts he even makes a practice squad. I think Damon Cromartie-Smith's a real wild card here. They can also keep Robert Golden on the practice squad as well, too. So that's kind of my thinking by Will Allen, as you know, he's going to have to get knocked out off of this roster.
You know, I agree with you wholeheartedly on the Myron Rowe thing. For any guy who's been in his second year in his second or third team and hasn't made a roster yet, you're a fringe guy. They're, you know, 10 of these guys wouldn't be here in seasons past because they'd only be bringing 80 to camp. So 10 guys are here that, you know, probably shouldn't be here anyway. And I think that'll make itself pretty clear early on in camp, just in terms of guys getting reps and who's getting the work. So we'll keep a close eye on that. But yes, I think that's an excellent point. The last battle, Dave, is we're talking about corners. We're staying in the defensive backfield here. Terrence Frederick and Terry Carter. Carter, the undrafted free agent out of La Tech. Frederick was the one of the four seventh-round picks the Steelers had this past year. I don't know enough about either of these two guys. What's your feeling on them?
You know, other than college tape, you know, Frederick better fit in the nickel spot, possibly Carter. Just not enough information on either one of these two. That's why I think it's going to shape up as such a good battle. The Steelers normally like to carry six cornerbacks, you know, out of training camp. But I think with some of the other roster needs, especially the safety position, I think they only carry five out of camp this time, with the loser of possibly the Frederick versus Carter battle ending up on the practice squad. So, you know, of course, they did select Frederick in the draft, which speaks a little bit more highly about him. But I really think, you know, judging by the reports from the media coming out of the off-season practices and all, Carter really, really did impress from what we're hearing. So we'll get a better gauge on that of where these guys run. And I'm going to be coming after you, David, to let me know which guy's running with what group they're in training camp there. But this is a good battle for a possibly fifth and final cornerback position on the roster. Sure, there are some dark horses like the Goodman kid, I guess, out of Slippery Rock as well. But I see this shaping up as a battle for one roster spot, you know, heading into camp.
And then an interesting one, the last one you have on your list, the ninth of nine, David Johnson and Will Johnson. And I think people are familiar with David Johnson, seventh-round pick out of Arkansas in 2009. Will Johnson, undrafted free agent out of West Virginia, 2011. And the issue here is what kind of offense are the Steelers going to run? David Johnson, seen as more of an inline guy, and are the Steelers going to use a fullback? And what, Dave, what I find curious is a lot of people talk about maybe using a fullback more. There are a lot of, I would say, talented, experienced NFL-quality fullbacks on the free agent market, and the Steelers didn't look at any of them. And I feel like that tells me that Will Johnson, who wasn't, you know, neither of these guys are prototypical fullbacks. Doesn't mean they can't do the job, but just tells me it's still going to be a very limited part of the Steelers' offense. I'd be surprised if kind of more than 10 or 15% of the sets really used maybe an offset eye or a fullback. So I think Wesley Saunders is going to start the season with a four-game suspension, so he won't count against the roster. It's clear a lot of the local media said he had no chance of making it. I think you and I both think he's absolutely going to make it, and I think there's a chance that maybe neither of these guys make it, but I guess we'd probably lean with David Johnson, the veteran.
Yeah, and you hit it on the head, and I posted about this during the offseason about what I expect just because they're naming a fullback, and you nailed it. I'm not expecting more than, you know, 15 or so snaps a game where you have a traditional lined up fullback with his hand in the dirt. They went out and they got Leonard Pope during this offseason, who in Todd Haley's offense has moved around kind of like an H-back situation. Johnson and both these Johnsons have done the same thing. You know, from what we've seen, David Johnson specifically has both had his hand in the dirt, has operated as an H-back, has also played on the line. I think because Saunders, starting the you know, supposed to start the season on the suspended list, and them only really possibly carrying, you know, we'll see what happens with David Paulson, the rookie, who's no lock to make the roster. Johnson gives you David Johnson gives you the flexibility to do quite a bit. Now, I will say this. The tape on Will Johnson is really, really exciting to watch. A converted wide receiver, excellent on the wheel route type patterns out of the backfield, a great route runner, a lot more shiftier than David Johnson is. My big question with him heading into training camp is how he functions as a lead blocker. Basically, that's, in my opinion, what it comes down to. If he can handle all the elements, you know, involved with the sort of a tight end slash H-back slash fullback position, then he's going to have a shot at beating David Johnson. But until I see otherwise in the preseason and the reports coming out of training camp, you have to give David Johnson the you know, tip of the cap here as the leader in the clubhouse right now.
Yep, I think so. And then, Dave, why don't we just, if you got, I don't know if you have it just handy in front of you, but we did talk about some of the sleepers, and let's just review. Adrian Robinson is an edge guy out of Temple. We just talked about him briefly, but he impressed guys in minicamp, and, you know, we're not used to hearing too much about undrafted free agents in minicamp, so when guys get named, it raises eyebrows. And give us one or two more names of guys that you're going to be paying attention to.
I think Terry Carter, who we just talked about there in one of the battles, is definitely a guy to pay attention on. If he doesn't make the 53-man roster, very good candidate to end up on the practice squad. Adrian Robinson is a guy that Keith Butler sort of name by name. I think he said the kid out of Temple, but for any undrafted free agent, that's a pretty big deal. So, you know, he's definitely a guy to look at during training camp as a possible practice squad candidate. And people are going to get mad at me because I don't view him as a 53-man roster candidate. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I just think he's better suited his first season on the practice squad. Robert Golden, one of the young safeties there. I think this is a kid with potential to possibly be a free safety of the future. Definitely a practice squad candidate. And Kelvin Beachum, although he was a seventh-round draft pick, you know, to me, in my opinion, he's going to have his work cut out now. He's been kicked inside the guard to make the 53-man roster. Definitely a guy to watch that'll be a candidate for the practice squad.
Yeah, and Dave, let's just touch on, since we haven't really talked about this at all, you know, it's funny because Allen Robinson, when he did his thing today, he had Lewis or Curtis Brown at the corner thing and threw in Cortez Allen's name. He had Rainey or Batch, which I think that some people think that. You have talked and we have talked about Clemens and Byler, the wide receiver. Let's look at just for 1 second the special teams, because it looks like, you know, we know who the punter is going to be. We know who the kicker is going to be. But it would appear that the early leader in the clubhouse to be the return man in both situations is Manny Sanders. But we have to think there are lots of guys who are in contention for that punt return.
Yeah, most definitely. I think Rainey being one of those, most definitely in that mix there. And you say punter, maybe a lock. I don't know. You know, the Drew Butler kid out of Georgia they signed as an undrafted free agent. He's going to push Kapanos, but, you know, I look back at last offseason in training camp. I thought Kapanos pushed Sepulveda all the way.
You had him on your last 53, right?
I sure did. We know how that played out with Sepulveda and yet another knee injury. I really thought Kapanos punted well for the Steelers last year. And
he did. And that is why I say that, is because, you know, at the end of the day, I think he'd have to, not only would he have to be bad, Butler would have to be great, because Kapanos really did a nice job last year.
I agree, and there's not much difference between the two salary-wise. Kapanos is back as an exclusive free agent. So only a couple hundred thousand more than Butler. So Butler's going to have to win that job. It's going to have to be clear. A lot more to look into this. He's going to be have to holding on kicks and all like that. Who's our kicker going to be, David? I mean, even
Sushi,
though,
baby. Sushi.
You know, okay, I'm willing to give you that he's going to beat Danny Ratman, but what's that saying when Ratman wasn't even the first choice as a as an undrafted free agent kicker signed after the draft? It was Grant Russell. Grant Russell was cut after the first rookie camp. Ratman comes in, not an really an unknown quantity there. Are the Steelers going to be watching the waiver wire for some of these final camp cutdowns if Swisham, you know, is not money during the preseason?
Absolutely. You know, Dave, one of the things we talk about is the Steelers are not going to – they will comb the waiver wire, and we've heard Kevin Colbert say, look, if there's marginal improvement to be made at the end of camp, you know, in early September, Steelers are unlikely to do it. They like guys who know their system. They'd have to be a guy who is a clear improvement. But if there's clear improvement to be made, they will make it. But I would say that if Swisham has a bad camp, we do know that there are at least 64 kickers in camp, in camps. And we know at least, depending on how, you know, 32 of those kickers and more if they're in camp are going to be available. So, and there are more than 32 NFL-capable kickers. And that's one of the things where, in terms of concern, yeah, you'd like to know who your guy is, but there will be good kickers on the waiver wire available all season long because kickers have become so proficient. There are 100 kickers probably out there who can do the job. Now, that doesn't mean some aren't better than others. I'm not belittling or diminishing the position. It is incredibly important, as we've seen over the years. But this is one I think that is less cause for concern on day one of camp.
Let me ask you this. Assuming Swisham makes the 53-man roster, does he make it the entire 2012
season? Yeah, you know I'm going to say yes. I'll tell you what impressed me most with him last year is how good his kickoffs were. I thought that was really going to be the weak link, but he was getting the ball, you know, to the goal line a couple yards deep most of the time. We all reserve the right to change our opinion if the facts change. But for where we sit today, I'll say sure.
Okay, I'm going to go against you. I'm going to go out on record right now that if Swisham makes the 53-man roster, he will not be the kicker for the entire season. Long snapper, very important position. The less you hear about the long snapper, the better. No way Greg Warren gets beat out by Matt Cotullo, right?
Yeah, I mean, for me to comment on that too extensively is just, you know, being contrarian. So the answer is Warren is a proven commodity. He doesn't cost that much. If this kid shows that for whatever reason he is, you know, the Michael Jordan of long snappers, it is certainly possible. But, you got to think Greg Warren's the guy.
Boy, we cover it all on the podcast, don't we? We even get into long snappers as well. And listen, my 53-man roster projection for the start of camp is up on SteelersDepot.com. Probably not too many surprises on that. A couple things will be questioned about the safety position, about probably the last cornerback position, and the battle between Al Woods and Corbin Bryant that we talked about. But I think after if you get a chance to look at it and look at my practice squad selections, you're probably not going to be too terribly off on what I have.
Yeah, and great stuff. As we wrap things up here, and we're going to start season three. This is the push now for us. This is when it gets fun. This is where you can help us in terms of getting our word out there. Please, when you listen to this, copy the link and send it to your friends. We like to get involved. We like to get you involved. We love getting feedback. We love getting questions. We're going to start ramping things up now. Dave and I will be going at some point here very shortly, be going to 3 days a week. I don't know if we'll be doing that right now because we'll be doing nightly stuff as well. But, send us the emails. Follow Dave on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. You can follow me on Twitter, at Hammer Speaks. You can follow the podcast, at Terrible Podcast. And you can email us with questions, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And, of course, we appreciate the continued donations. It's fantastic. You can do that on Dave's website, SteelersDepot.com. There's a PayPal link there. And there's also another way, Dave, that they can do that.
They can just go to PayPal and donate to the email address, admin@SteelersDepot.com. I believe we heard from Spain this week. Do we?
We did. We had a guy in Bilbao, where I've actually been to Bilbao. So we got a little shout out from, so, you know, Dave, we're going to have to get a map and start putting pins in, because I think we're up to about, you know, 20, 25 countries that we've heard from, throughout the Middle East, the Far East, Russia, some in South America. So, you know, maybe we'll start cataloging this stuff. Maybe we'll get some kind of thing on your blog where we can start coloring in countries.
Yeah, and states too. So, you know, one thing, if you're bored, you want to give us a shout out through email, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Let us know that you're listening to this show. You know, we see the traffic numbers and all like that, but it's, we always enjoy hearing feedback from people of who listens, where they listen from. It's exciting for me and David. It's amazing with the power of the internet, not only with Twitter and the internet itself, but to see how far something like this podcast can reach out. And boy, it's been a great off season, David. World difference from last off season. Yes. All that air time that we were able to fill during the lockout. I'm not sure how we did it. Thank God I had you with me to do that. And David, I want to congratulate you on the stuff. You did an excellent job with filling in for Joe Bindle on 970 ESPN the last couple of weeks. I'm proud to say I was a guest on there a few times there. And really, I look forward to you being one of my main go-to guys on Steelers Nation Radio during training camp. I think that's a big boost to your radio career as well. And I want to appreciate you for all that you do.
Well, I appreciate that. That's very kind. And I'll also, as I said, be on at night. And the good thing about the night shows, if you're able to hear us, we'll be taking calls. So I'll be with somebody. I'm going to have that scheduled this afternoon, and I'll shoot it over to Dave as well. So we'll have some good stuff, and we can have a guest. We get Dave on there. We'll be having some good fun the next 3 weeks.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast. Season 2, episode 128, the last episode of season 2 with Dave and Dave.